Welcome to Haunted Hills podcast, True Crime from Rosedale, Victoria. When Haunted Hills looks at crimes, it's an interesting reflection on the past, the values, timeliness, and sense of justice. While you're able to play judge and jury, we're not re-adjudicating these crimes. Most of them occurred too long ago for that to be appropriate. However, these discussions create an interesting contrast of values. The offences covered reflect the rural nature of our towns, shedding light on some of the people we don't usually talk about, and what is or was considered criminal at the time. In Rosedale, the locals believe their town was held up on many occasions due to the gold that stopped over on its way back from the goldfields in Walhalla. Let's investigate. Firstly, I'm going to start with a more recent crime from 1951, where four men started drinking in the afternoon at Morwell. They're right, all good crime stories don't start with drinking milk. That's the saying, right? Anyway, the Morwell Hotel shut at 6 p.m. The men set out in a taxi to continue their drinking in Rosedale, as bona fide travellers. They arrived at the Exchange Hotel, who refused them service. They stumbled over to the Rosedale Hotel. No publican greeted them. But a 1938 Chevrolet's open door beckoned them. They hopped in the Rosedale owner's car, taking turns driving as they all realised how drunk they were. They got as far as Sheepwash Creek, the Rosedale side of Traralgon, where they crashed the car, all while the taxi they paid for was waiting at the Exchange Hotel. The car was worth £500 to £600 at the time. The accident caused £150 worth of damage. It had destroyed the front and right-hand panels of the car, bent the chassis and the radiator. The driver also hit his head on the steering wheel. He revved the engine uselessly, trying to continue drunk driving. An ambulance arrived and assessed the scene and decided to take Martin, the driver at the time, to the hospital. The three other men found lifts back to Morwell with another driver. The four men were caught and brought before the court. I asked listeners what they thought.
You don't have to be sorry, you're allowed to have any opinions you want to have. This is all about your opinions.
The Latrobe Valley paranormal detective said, charges they would lay are reckless driving, driving under the influence, car theft, and if they weren't there when the police arrived at the scene, leaving the scene of an accident. Oh, that's a good one. I'm not sure if the police... No, I do believe they'd left the scene before police. And they would sentence 1 year loss of license and 3 months for each other charge. So 9 months imprisonment all up.
We have one vote for feeding them to Shark to Cons. At least they're purple, I like that, and they've got massive teeth. They'd really get through four guys. Do they like drunk people? Drunk disorderly, fine them for the damages. That's a more reasonable solution, I think. Way more justice involved in that one, as opposed to a definite death sentence looking at those teeth from the Sharktacons.
At the court, the judge noted George, one of the four men, didn't have prior convictions. He asked, "Were you in the company of nice criminals?" Yes. It would have been a little patronising. The judge said, "One thing is certain, people who take other people's cars can rest assured that when they come before me in this court, they will go to jail." The paper did not list their ages, but Martin worked as a subcontractor and he lived in Melbourne. He even had his own truck. He was the one who was injured when he hit his head on the steering wheel and was taken to hospital. He had prior convictions in Victoria, Western Australia and Queensland, and as a result, was sentenced to 4 months imprisonment. Cousins had 3 prior convictions, also stole a rug from that car. So, on the charge of stealing the car, he received 3 months imprisonment, plus an £8 fine or 14 days in prison, on top of the 3 months he'd already served. Thomas had a current bond from the Supreme Court, which is now broken with this new sentence. He was sentenced to 2 months imprisonment. George, who had no priors, was also sentenced to a term of imprisonment for 1 month. A quick note, a bona fide traveller for residents, pubs used to close at 6 p.m. The bona fide traveller was exempt and able to continue drinking, provided they were more than 35 kilometres from their home. That was the local law in the Rosedale area at this time of this crime, but this distance varied over the years and in different areas. Stopping at the pub had to be part of a significant reason for being in the area, as opposed to just finding an open pub for a drink. In the 1940s, the Rosedale Exchange Hotel licensee came unstuck when 4 people claimed they were bona fide travellers. At 9:40 p.m, the police officer investigated why the bar was still open. He obtained the names and addresses of the 4 people at the pub. He discovered the 2 ladies were from St Kilda in Melbourne. However, the 2 men lived in Traralgon. They informed the police officer they had stayed in Melbourne the night before. For those of you who are not local to the Gippsland area, Traralgon is on the road before Melbourne when you're at Rosedale. So these men have driven an extra 20 minutes to go to this pub. So this might be where the law gets glitchy, because while in their minds that made them bona fide travellers, the police officer did not believe that made them bona fide travellers. Even though the law was based on where you slept the night before, the publican, who is a local, should have known these men drove past their home. So this may be why the constable did not agree with the publican, and he said to the publican that he must satisfy himself that the persons before him are bona fide travellers before serving them. This went to court and the publican was fined £2 and an 11th of the court costs. The 2 men whose addresses were in Traralgon were fined 10 shillings apiece. Anyway, back to theft, or taking things without permission, was a horse theft. In 1889, Martin took a horse for a series of rides across Gippsland on different days without permission. You might call it stealing. However, at the time, the law called it illegally using a horse. And for the record, the horse did not have to be locked up, protest, or say no. Unfortunately, it was not just taking the horse for a ride. He also did not care for it appropriately before or during use. He did not put a blanket under the saddle. This caused a wound to be rubbed into the horse's back. The owner saw the wound and tended to it while he rested his horse. During this time, the owner let the horse recover. Martin again rode the horse, and this time all the way to Yarram, which for those of you who aren't local is over quite a steep mountainous range called the Strzelecki's, and it is very hard going. Today it's still quite steep. However, in 1889, it would have been wombat holes and thick brush. So he rode this horse, pushing it hard to make it there and back in one day, which is about a 120 km round trip. This destroyed the horse's joints and back. The injuries were so bad they were beyond repair. The poor mare had to be put down. The horse was worth £12. Oh, I asked listeners what they thought should happen, and here are some of their responses.
Yep, he'd get a fine, shillings, pay £12 and some hard labour.
So at court, a fine of 20 shillings and pay the costs for the horse that at the time was determined to be £8. Martin's age was not listed in the newspaper at this time. I could continue to go on through all the cattle thefts and other things that were stolen, like the railway tarpaulin, but there is no element of interest or surprise in those stories. And there were only 4 bank robberies, according to the Rosedale Historical Society, which all seemed rather boring as well. Louisa was 20 years old when she married 44-year-old James in 1875. After a year of marriage, it was on the rocks. Louisa admitted to having an affair with their farmer at the Sale Hotel. This resulted in James and Louisa separating, and Louisa moved in with a different man, a shoemaker. The shoemaker and Louisa also moved into a hotel, which was odd, because the shoemaker had a home. However, for some reason, he decided to lock it up with all his belongings and not invite Louisa back there. This didn't stop Louisa, who helped herself in breaking and entering. She proceeded to steal all his earthly possessions and sell them for £60. Curiously, she wasn't brought up on charges for this, and in return, the shoemaker was not listed as a defendant when James decided to divorce her. However, his application was denied, and Louisa returned to James. In 1878, Louisa was charged with horse stealing. One thing she kept straight about this crime was Louisa believed it was a horse given to her by James. She hadn't seen it very often, as it stayed on the town commons. Louisa had sold the horse. She spent the proceeds to support her child. When the case went to court, after Annie, the horse's owner, noticed it missing, James gave evidence against Louisa. Her lawyer objected. The buyer spoke at the trial, and he said he hadn't thought it was strange that a woman would be selling a horse. So I asked the listeners what they thought should happen as a result of selling a horse that is not yours. The Latrobe Valley Paranormal Detectives said 6 months hard labour was the usual crime of selling stolen goods, I believe.
Pay £12 and some hard labour. That sounds like a plan. So hard labour was usually in the prisons back in these days.
So at court, it was ruled a mistake and for each of the parties to deal with their grievances lawfully. The person who accused Louisa withdrew their charge. This same year, she was also charged with assaulting Annie. Louisa said she was atop her horse and could not have assaulted her from that position, and she never dismounted in Annie's presence. Another witness was brought in and gave evidence against Louisa, stating she had gotten off her horse and hit and assaulted Annie. Louisa was fined 10 shillings, and if she couldn't pay, she would serve 12 hours in prison. Louisa sued James for child maintenance, and he was made to pay it. In 1880, Louisa assaulted James and was brought to the court on charges. While James was giving evidence in the witness box, in front of the entire court, Louisa lunged and attacked him. The police struggled to remove her from James. She fought the police, throwing herself around and swinging balled up fists connecting with the police officers. Finally, she was arrested back to the dock, where she continued making a scene. Louisa threatened to kill James, boasting she'd be glad to do the time if she could kill him. Louisa continued to talk over the proceedings. I asked listeners to comment on what they thought would happen to Louisa as a result of this behaviour. 120 hours of labour, about 3 months worth of labour. The Latrobe Valley Paranormal Detective said the behaviour at court would have surely put her in the asylum in those days. Well, she was sentenced to 1 month imprisonment for the assault, then also essentially given a good behaviour bond, However, in 1880, to fulfill the surety, as it was called, you had to pay. Louisa did not have the money. It was £50. If you couldn't pay the surety, you served a prison term based on that amount, which ended up increasing Louisa's prison term by 12 months. When she was released from prison, she sued one of the police officers who worked at the prison for maintenance over the child he impregnated her with during her time in incarceration. Only one paper brought up the issue that has probably been raised in your minds: Louisa's ability to make this choice without coercion. To consent, if you will. The editor of the Kerrang and Swanhill Gazette noticed it and said, "Immorality by a government official, an instance of immorality in a government establishment, one of the jails of the colony, and by one entrusted with and paid for the prevention of misconduct, together with the gross abuse of a charitable institution." Paternity was determined to be the constable's, and he did have to pay maintenance. However, that is as far as it went. There is no court case, no penalty, no investigation, just really harsh words from the editor of the Kerrang and Swanhill Gazette. Finally, in 1883, James brought forth an application for divorce because of Louisa's adultery. He added the policeman this time. It still had that farmer listed, and this time it was upheld. Back in 1883, the divorces were only granted in cases of fault, and used terms such as taxed her with adultery.